direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
James Show, and the phone rang at a residence recently. The lady of the house answered, "Hello, Mrs. Sanders, please, speaking. Mrs. Sanders, this is Dr. Jones at St. Agnes Laboratory. When your husband's doctor sent in his biopsy to our lab last week, a biopsy from another Mr. Sanders arrived as well. We're now uncertain which one belongs to your husband. Frankly, either way, the results aren't too good." "What do you mean?" Mrs. Sanders asks nervously. "Well, one of the specimens tested positive for Alzheimer's. The other tested positive for HIV, and we can't tell which is which." That's dreadful. Can you do the test again?" "Well, normally we could, but under the ACA, under Obamacare, they will only pay for these expensive tests one time." "Well, what am I supposed to do now?" "Well, we spoke to the government, and the folks at Obamacare recommended you drop your husband off somewhere in the middle of town. If he finds his way home, don't sleep with him." I couldn't resist it. You know, the reason that is funny, like all humor, is because there's more than a kernel of truth in it. Obamacare will be rationing. You know, for years we've done the NHS horror of the day on this show, and I've never run out of material. But what's frightening right now is America is focused on what Obamacare is going to cost them in terms of dollars, and that may be the cheapest price we pay, because what it's going to cost us in terms of medical care is outrageous. And if you think patients and potential patients are talking about it, doctors are rightfully over the moon. So I want you to meet Dr. Larry Huntoon here in a moment. He's editor-in-chief of the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons, and he's written a great article on the Complete Lives System, which we've talked about before, the Ezekiel Emanuel horror. We'll get to that, no doubt. He's also past president of the AAPS, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, which was founded back in 1943. You know, we've had people on over the years, and I think many people think, well, this is a relatively new group against the AMA, but no, the mission has been, since 1943, to protect and preserve the sacrosanct patient-physician relationship. He currently holds the office of secretary at the AAPS. He's a member of the board of directors of the American Health Legal Foundation and much, much more. Board-certified fellow of the American Academy of Neurology with a Ph.D. in physiology with research experience in neurophysiology and electrophysiology. He's a practicing neurologist who opted out of medical care in 2004 and runs a third-party free neurology practice in Derby, New York. And Dr. Huntoon, thank you for joining us, and thank you for dumping Medicare.
Well, thank you for having me on your show this evening.
You know, it's interesting. You, in neurology, more than some disciplines, understand firsthand that medicine is every bit as much of an art as well it is as a science. Knowing things in theory and knowing things in terms of academically, that's very important. But the greatest successes come from your ability to know and almost intuitively know what you're dealing with your patients. And it seems to me that Obamacare takes that aspect completely away.
I think you're right that I think we will be looking, at least as physicians, we will be looking more at guidelines and protocols that will allow certain tests and treatments for certain conditions. So I do think that that will take a lot of the as you say, experience out of it.
Well, it'll also take a lot of the success out of it. You know, it galls me when individuals who know little about medicine, either from their academic experience or, frankly, from their health experience, are making these rules. It's like when HMOs and capitation and all that started, they would always do the surveys, and 97% of the people thought this was great, and then you find out that only 3% of the people were actually sick. When people are dealing with a doctor whose mouth is muzzled and hands are tied, what you get is cookbook medicine, and frankly, the safety net for people of money, if they were in England or Canada or Spain, was to come to the United States. Where the hell are we going to go?
That's a very good question, and I'm sure Canadians are a bit frightened at that, too.
I know they are firsthand. And this is something that I hear some people who are saying, well, look at the mess it's in, and there's no doubt that it is. This is great, it'll fall apart. And my fear, and I have a sneaking suspicion you join me, is that instead of falling apart, this is going to usher in socialized medicine.
Right. So I think that it was designed to fall apart so as to lead to socialized medicine. I think that Obamacare was basically designed to put private insurance out of business, and it was basically designed to put independent physicians out of business.
I agree 100%, and I think it's going to possibly happen faster than any of us can imagine. So with that daunting analysis, is it too late? Is there anything we can do?
Well, let's hope it's not too late. I mean, there are still efforts out there to defund Obamacare, and there are certainly states that have refused to expand Medicaid under Obamacare. And it remains to be seen what's going to happen with young people, because if they don't buy into this, if they don't go out and spend a lot of money on these very high health insurance premiums, there's going to be a tremendous problem. How do you fund it when there are only sicker and older people in the insurance pool?
Sure, and that's the whole game of socialism, and it's certainly pointed out in the Complete Live system. I'll get a link to that, and we will talk about it. But when you talk about, for instance, younger people and how expensive it is for them, by dumping catastrophic plans for people who are over 30, individuals in the individual market as opposed to the employer market, many of them have opted, I'll take good care of myself, I'll get a catastrophic plan in case it's awful, and I'll afford the premiums. That's now going to be illegal.
Right. And, I mean, catastrophic policies are the very types of policies that attract younger people, because what they need is true insurance coverage for the really big expenses if they get really sick. What we have today is not really true insurance. It's prepaid health care,
yeah.
And it's a very expensive form of prepaid health care through HMOs.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is prepaid medical. And used to be, back in the day, a prudent family would have a hospitalization policy in the 50s, 60s, or 70s if they didn't have work-related insurance. They'd get hospitalization. They wouldn't worry about it beyond that. Costs were reasonable. And it's alarming to me that the doctor and the hospital is painted out as the villain in this, when in fact it was the government system that caused this to go out of whack.
Well, that's exactly right, but we wouldn't expect the government to point to themselves as the culprit.
No, but I would expect doctors to do that, and already, unless they're fully independent, they're being penalized for saying that.
Yeah, I mean, you have to watch, I think, in some of these systems what you say. There used to be gag clauses in physician contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of those are illegal now. But, I mean, the insurance companies can still cause a lot of trouble for physicians who are speaking out against the insurance company.
And I expect the government will cause even more trouble. Now, being independent yourself, and you're not on the government dole at all, at this point in time, is there anything in this law that you're looking at and you're saying, they're going to get me for practicing medicine in the way I feel is in my patient's best interest?
Well, of course, with these accountable care organizations that we see coming up with Obamacare, what these are going to be huge conglomerates. They're going to be massive groups of physicians partnering with hospitals and insurance companies, And so what will happen to a lot of the independent physicians, or what may happen, is the referral base to those independent physicians may simply dry up, because all the referrals will be within the accountable care system.
Yeah.
So I see that as a problem.
Oh, an absolute threat, and I agree with you. I think just like in the HMOs, where the best guy in the nearest hospital is around the corner, but you're going to go 30 miles because it's part of our system, that's exactly the way this is going to come down. And for someone who is a specialist, do you envision it will not be possible to operate independently?
Well, I think there will always be those out there. There will still be, I think, a good number of uninsured people who are looking for actual affordable care from independent physicians. And the fact is, a lot of independent physicians can lower their fees because they don't have the huge administrative expense of filing claims and dealing with the government. And believe me, dealing with the government is a real headache, and it's a very costly headache.
Oh, it's the worst. Recently, John came in, and he had gone for his annual physical, and told me that his doctor was telling him a story where 30 years ago, a patient came in with gout. He wrote one sentence on his chart, has gout, prescribed this, whatever it was. The guy came back now, 30 years later, same exact thing, had gout, and it took him 2.5 pages that he had to document for this. He gave him the same prescription.
Right. What's happened is, the government, particularly the Medicare program, has driven a lot of this, and understand that insurers have adopted Medicare's methods, and they've basically transformed the patient medical record into a billing record. And it's no longer, if you look at it and try and read it, it's more of a billing record, and it doesn't really tell you what's going on with the patient. I recall one case where I sent a patient to a prestigious medical center in the Midwest. And the question I had was, is this patient a candidate for the deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's?
Mm-hmm.
And I got back a very lovely 7-page, single-spaced, typed consult report that went through and hit each of the billing points mm-hmm. for Medicare so that the highest level of consult could be billed. But the one thing he forgot to answer was the question.
You know, it's I can laugh because I don't potentially have Parkinson's. But again, when we're talking about the doctor's ability to operate and the frustration involved and the patient's ability to actually handle a problem, we're already in deep trouble. And, you know, for the cookbook guy who just comes in and doesn't need a neurologist because, after all, everybody knows exactly what he's got, that guy might be fine. But when you've got a case where you're saying, man, I'm not sure what this is, that requires a level of expertise and a level of investigation that I don't think that's going to be legal.
And understand that there is no code for, gee, I'm not sure what this is, that you have to code it as something if you're in the system, or you won't be paid as a physician.
Oh, if you're in the system and you code it wrong, it's criminal. You'll go to, you know, I've seen some articles where they say the fine is, for something like that, $50,000 per occurrence.
It's ruinous, and there have been physicians. I know of one that went to prison last year for 4 or 5 months because the government did not agree with what he wrote in his operative report. They felt it was not descriptive of the operation the way that the surgeon described it. But who else could describe it better than the surgeon himself? And part of the problem was there was no code for the special innovative procedure that the doctor learned how to perform. And so he tried to describe it, and the government didn't like it. He ended up going to prison for 4 to 5 months.
See, this is something where, no matter how driven I was to help, I'd find another line of work. I think we're going to be forcing the very people we want to treat us out of the industry.
I think that's true. I mean, if you're a physician and you've spent years, in training and with years of experience, and you find yourself in a situation where non-medical bureaucrats are telling you what you can and can't do, and there are ruinous fines, and you might even lose your freedom and go to prison for doing something they disagree with, why wouldn't you start looking for another profession?
Right, right. You'd have to be checked if you didn't, actually, at that point. Something's wrong. And some specialties are probably a little more straightforward by the book, but when you get into others, and I think neurology would be one of those, there are many times you're going to look at something and it's not necessarily by the book. So if you do not accept insurance and you are paying cash, is there any threat that your patients will be stuck with you having to follow the cookbook?
Well, the answer is yes. I mean, I see Medicare patients and I see patients who are insured. But what happens is if I order a test or something, well, then that goes back into the system, the system for rationing. It goes to the insurance company. You have to pre-authorize it. They have to approve it. So it's unless they're able to find independent radiologists and whatnot, they still are trapped by the system. And there aren't too many independent radiologists out there who are like the independent physicians practicing in an office.
Do you see some of that coming? Because there's several disciplines. One of them, anesthesiology. I've noticed over the years that the anesthesiologist gets insanely low compensation for what he's doing. And, you know, I always remind friends that this is the guy who's going to determine whether you come out of this surgery. You might not grumble while you're paying this bill. There again, you know, the rate of return is so low that I wonder whether individuals like that and maybe some radiologists and others aren't going to start opening more of their own centers and surgery centers that bypass the insurance industry.
Well, and that has started to happen already. There is a surgery center in Oklahoma, where the anesthesiologists and the surgeons all work at the independent surgery center, and they're able to provide a price for the entire procedure, whatever the surgical procedure is. And I believe that the prices are about one-tenth what people would pay for the very same procedure in a hospital in the same town.
Right. And, you know, now we get into the cost shifting where you take a standard lab test, and if Medicaid pays for it, they pay almost nothing. And if Medicare pays for it, it's not much better. If the Big Blues pay for it, maybe it's 10%. And if you pay for it, you're going to be billed 10 times what the Blues paid. So the idea that you can be uninsured and work in the system is impossible because the retail rate is not what the government's paying.
Right, and I think that's particularly true of hospital prices, for example, that you might find that the uninsured person, maybe the one who can least afford medical care, is being charged some multiple, you know, 5 to 10 times what others are being charged for the same hospital stay and treatment.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something with the high deductible plans that, you know, when you're with the Blues, well, you're probably going to get the best deductible rates, you know, the negotiated rates compared to when you're with Joe's Insurance and Grill. But the uninsured guy, 10 times what the Blues are paying is not terribly unusual. And I suspect what Medicaid, and probably to an extent what Medicare is reimbursing, is less than the value of the service, so they cost shift it up. Do you think that's happening?
I think that very well could be happening. Somebody just sent me a website today where they're going to start posting hospital charges online. So if it's a patient, for example, who is uninsured and they've encountered a really high price, they can now go online and post it and tell others, look, this is what I was charged when I went to this specific hospital. And there's going to be some of these hospitals are going to be dragged into kicking and screaming. They're going to be dragged into price transparency. And I don't think they're going to like it.
No, I'd like to see it transparent. And this is what Medicare would pay. And this is what the private insurance on average pays, so that you get to see it starkly and realize that the government's getting away with a fraction of what you'll be billed.
Right.
And that's no small thing. But again, apart from the money aspect, the real problems here surround the delivery of care, the ability to make a decision for a patient. Do you envision that at some point, even doctors who have opted out are going to be prohibited by law from offering the treatment they feel is best?
Well, I hope not. I mean, I hope there's not laws passed where you're forced into Medicare as a condition of licensure. I mean, there's talk about that in some states. It's basically forcing doctors into socialism and forcing them to basically pledge allegiance to the state instead of the patient. And I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm only concerned because they have a lot of very well-intentioned quackery laws, and of course we don't want quackery to go on, but it can become a very fine line when they start to codify what that means. And my fear is that the day is going to come when it's, you know, not the Hillary Clinton care, Obama care textbook definition, that then it's quackery and you can't do it.
Well, you could see what happens in other countries when they forbid people to spend their own money on their own care. You sort of see an underground healthcare network begin to develop, and maybe that could happen here. I don't know.
And you know, that might not be a terrible thing, but again, for somebody who has gone through all the medical training and expense that a fully licensed MD has, that's a horrible way to have to go. If the public were aware. And again, from the medical consumer aspect, they're never aware until they're sick. But if the public were aware, could the public do anything about this?
Well, I think they could put pressure on their congressman to do something about it. And certainly defunding Obamacare would be a good start.
You probably saw today that the Republicans are going to be Republicrats. And they're not going to defund it. They're going to, at best, put through something that will say we're defunding it, that the Senate can remove without concern, and it won't go back to the House. So rather than have people stand up for clearly what is a public outcry, they're caving to this, which is a great concern. But even more so when I get into the complete live system, which you talk about eloquently in your editorial. And this was Emanuel, Rahm Emanuel's brother, who wrote this, of course. And it is socialism at its finest, if you will. And to me, socialism's a religion. That's because we have to take it on faith. It's never worked anywhere long-term in the world. But here we are, medically. What's this going to mean to the sick guy?
Well, it may mean that the sick guy is not going to get care, because there has to be some determination whether the sick guy is worth spending government money on, and that will be the only kind of money that will be good as far as paying for medical care. So the person who is really sick may not get care, because they're making a judgment that maybe they could use that money to treat five other people.
And, of course, they'll make that judgment, I'll say arbitrarily, but they'll say based on things like your age. Or the one that kills me, your benefit to society, to guarantee that politicians will be getting only the best, and everybody else will at best be waiting in line.
Right. They call that instrumental value. It's a judgment about your usefulness to society. And how frightening is that? A bureaucrat somewhere determining your usefulness to society as a factor as to whether or not you're going to get a medical intervention.
And for his doing that, he will get medical intervention, because he's deemed to be valuable.
Right. They have carved out a specific provision for those who promote what they call morally relevant principles. So, for example, the people who develop the complete live system, of course, consider themselves to be promoting morally relevant principles, and therefore they would have special treatment under this system that they designed.
Now, the complete live system is not something that you had to unearth. This was published in The Lancet, and this was well known to many. You didn't have to do days of research to find it, so it's out there. Clearly, age alone is probably one of the most stark things, because they actually put it in years. The senior citizen, forget about it. And I bring all that up because who are some of the biggest proponents of Obamacare? The AARP.
Right.
To me, if that doesn't prove that they're a socialist organization, nothing does. Seniors united only in their love of hotel discounts. I don't know.
Well, if you look at the graph, they're certainly not doing things that are helping their constituents.
Right, because intervention of any type of treatment falls precipitously, as you say, past age 55.
Right.
So a plan that is guaranteed to hurt its membership is something that they're supporting with gusto.
Got to wonder if the members know that. Maybe they're listening to your show and they will know it now.
Well, you know, I'm a big believer on any talk radio that we preach to the choir. The people who aren't on board already probably tuned out at the beginning. But it is galling to me that the AARP is able to so successfully pull the wool over the members' eyes, because I do think, again, the majority sign up because it's cheap and they'll get hotel discounts. And then AARP goes lobbies to Congress saying we have all these members behind us who have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
And getting that word out, of course, is hard. But then you look at doctors, and you know, the AMA is no bastion of conservatism either, to say the least. Here your fellow doctors are in the exact same boat you are. What percentage share your appropriate concern about the system?
Oh, I think it's hard to tell a percentage. I mean, I think people have said, you know, things are pretty well split nationwide, just as they're split nationwide among the public as far as supporters and those who don't support Obamacare. Interesting, Ezekiel Emanuel, you mentioned the AMA, he's on the editorial board of the Journal of the American Medical Association, so maybe that explains why they keep coming out with these issues that are devoted to, entirely to global health and redistribution of not only health resources, but money. They're looking to get rid of extreme poverty and provide universal coverage at the same time.
Well, and that's been the goal forever. And we normally think of socialism and communism as just that, wealth redistribution. But what you learn when you read Emanuel, and we should mention, you know so well, but he's a doctor. He's an MD. He should know firsthand what he is proposing, but in his hierarchy of needs and goods, he places communism / socialism above medical needs. This is really the first time for Americans that they're faced not so much with how their wealth might be redistributed, because we've seen that to a degree in taxation all of our lives, but now our health. And for most of us, our wealth is secondary to how we're feeling.
Right, and they're going to be redistributing life years. And you also have to understand that, yes, Dr. Emanuel is a doctor, but he worked for the government at the time that he published this. He was in the Department of Bioethics, the Clinical Center, National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. So he was working for the government at the time that this article was published.
Oh, yeah, there no doubt about it. But you would have hoped that somewhere along the way in that training, the idea, going back to what I said about it being an art as well as a science, would have hit him, because everything of which he writes takes any art in the equation and throws it out the window.
Right. But if you remember history, there were physicians in Germany that went along with some very bad things. And so their training didn't prohibit them from engaging in that type of activity.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned that, and of course, as you bring out in your editorial, words like Untermenschen are actually used in his document.
Yes, that's a bit scary. This was another article that Dr. Emanuel wrote recently, was published in the Journal of American Medical Association. And they were basically expressing concern that people may not embrace this socialist system. And they did use the word Untermenschen in that article, which is a German word for subhuman and inferior people. And it was used, of course, by the Nazis to justify racial genocide.
Absolutely. And the useless eaters and life unworthy of life and all of that. And it's in some ways stunning to me, because here is Emanuel, by his family upbringing, who were, as far as I know, Ashkenazi Jews. Maybe they had members of their own family who were harmed by just these principles, that they would come out of this. And what is intact is their absolute adherence toward systems that have never worked from the beginning of mankind.
Right, and they did state in the article that the complete live system does not create classes of undermenschen, but that tells you that they were concerned that some people might remember history and might remember what that term conjures up.
But, of course, it does exactly that. Their argument that they can be ageist because, after all, we're all going to grow old, that falls a little short if you're 56 and denied the surgery.
Indeed it does. And their argument there is, if you've lived 80 years, you have more life years than the person who's lived 20. It's like you have more money than the other person, and therefore they're going to redistribute some of that so that we can have equality of life years.
Yeah, so you're, you know, the fair distribution of wealth. Well, we've almost gotten used to people saying that, but the fair distribution of life years, this should cause everybody to go into a tizzy. And I think the only argument I've heard publicly is their adamant denial that that could happen.
Well, although if you look at the complete live system, that is largely what it's based on, is age.
Well, and you don't only have to look at that. You can look at socialized medicine anywhere in the world, which is almost everywhere in the world, and that is a component of every system that I've ever seen.
Right.
You know, what we see out of the NHS is so instructive. And also the idea that someone in Great Britain who was denied a service they desperately need for their well-being, if they say, well, I'm going to pay cash for it, suddenly they're denied any other treatment whatsoever unless they pay cash. So unless they're the queen, you can't afford to do it.
Right, and that's sort of like Medicare in this country, you know. As a person on Medicare, you cannot give up your Medicare unless you agree to give up your Social Security. And so there are a lot of people who are dependent on Social Security, and even if they wanted to get out of the Medicare system past the age of 65, that would be the cost to them, if they would give up everything they paid in the Social Security and supposedly what they may get back. They would have to give that up to get out of Medicare, and most people, I don't think, understand that.
Oh, I know, considering that Social Security is not voluntary. Anybody who is working, they're losing 15.4%, both halves. No employers donating to the Red Cross. It's coming out of their pay. So the idea the government's going to take over 15% of your money every year and then dictate to you not only who you could who you could will it to, which is nobody when you die, unless you've got a lawfully wedded spouse. And tell you that, oh, you decide to not take advantage of the wonderful Medicare, you get nothing. But fortunately, I think people in this country can still opt to get around it by paying and going privately, can they not?
They can. So that involves going to see an opted-out physician.
Right.
But unless you see an opted-out physician, those past the age of 65 no longer have the ability to spend their own money on their own medical care as they choose. So they would have to find an opted-out physician, which, by the way, the number of opted-out physicians, I think, has tripled in just the past few years.
Good. And I know on AAPS Online, they have that information where you can search it by state. And some states are probably more plentiful where you find it, but I think in every state you'll find somebody.
Correct.
And that that's a start. And these are resources, I think, that people need to think about while they're well, because the minute you get the diagnosis or you have the symptom that's really just come, you're crushing to the floor with a problem, that's not the time to worry about this.
No, and you may not have the energy or wherewithal to fight it at that point.
Exactly. Either. And so I think that for all of us, it behooves us, even if we can't convince our lawmakers to do anything, that we need to be proactive. At this point, I don't think there's anything in the system that prohibits us from seeking private treatment. But in other systems, such as Great Britain, there are. Have you heard any talk that they're going to move toward that in this country?
No, I haven't, but of course there are disincentives. If you're privately insured, there are disincentives that the insurance companies apply for going out of network, that is, seeing physicians who have not agreed to sign up with the insurance company. They will basically financially penalize the patient who does that.
Oh, sure they will. But, I don't have a lot of sympathy for people, and I don't like the system. But when it's your health, I don't think you get down to saying, well, I can only be treated by what my insurance says or where I get the best referral or any of that. You find what you need, and if you can get somebody who is not enmeshed in the system, you're probably going to get a reasonable rate, and the answer is pay it.
And I think you're absolutely right, but I do think there are a lot of people that they think, well, if my insurer doesn't pay for it, I can't get it. And unfortunately, there are a lot of physicians that promote that idea and tell the patient, well, you know, you probably need this, but your insurance won't pay for it, therefore you can't get it. And they may tell them something like that, or that implies that to the patient, that they can't get it unless their insurance pays for it.
Yeah, and I've seen that. I've seen that a lot. Individuals, for instance, who might benefit from chiropractic care, where that's not included in their plan, but an orthopedic surgeon is. So they'll do things that might be drastic compared to what they could first try to be gentle because they didn't want to pay the $35 a visit. The mentality is almost drummed into some people not to take responsibility. But the outcomes, of course, down the road, you talk to some of these people, and they're real sorry they didn't rethink that.
Right. And I mean, there are some physicians that won't even tell the patient that of certain options because, for example, the insurer doesn't cover it. And if you start telling patients, if you're with that insurer, if you start telling patients about that option and treatment, but your insurer doesn't cover it, the insurer may view that as bad mouthing the insurance company, and trouble can arise that can ruin the physician's career.
And that has happened, and I've seen that happen. And, of course, in the horrible muzzling days of HMOs of the 80s, that was standard. And, you know, there were the celebrated cases, like I believe it was Kaiser in California, that would pay for a young boy's amputation but not for saving the limb. And that was their determination, and the doctor didn't tell the family there was a way to save the limb. That type thing, when society hears it, reverberates through town. But not many changes happen. Fortunately, now we've got the internet, and we can do some independent research. Of course, you as a doctor probably cringe at that thought too, because a little bit of knowledge can be dangerous as hell. But the idea that a consumer try to be more informed, I think everything that they would need to know, they're going to find if they research it.
I'm happy with patients who want to be more informed, and they get their information wherever they get it from. And if they have questions about that, I'm happy to answer them.
Well, good. We're going to take a break, and I hope you will take a couple phone calls.
Sure.
Okay, terrific. We're talking with Dr. Larry Huntoon. I'll have a link to the editorial, The Complete Live System, online. We have spent a lot of time talking about what will happen in terms of economically and economic rationing, but what will happen in terms of your well-being physically is tremendous. We'll also get into the impact of electronic medical records and what that may mean to you. But Charles in Tennessee is chomping at the bit, so we'll pick it up there in moments on the Raleigh James Show. I blew the break, yes, as I always do, so no fanfare, no jingle, just me. But that's right. However, there was something I needed to tell you, and that's if you're sitting at home listening on your computer right now, you got to get yourself a Wi-Fi radio if you don't have one yet. This is the best way to listen to online streams. It's like magic. It takes every stream online, which English-speaking right now, including music, I'd say that's upwards of 25,000 full-time streams. It takes every one of them, puts them on a radio. Just like AM or FM, only this is magic. It's all the Wi-Fi stations. Yes, it's commercial radio as well. Maybe that station that was your favorite from where you used to live. It's also internet only and much more. Plenty Wi-Fi radios from which to choose. I think the CC Wi-Fi is the hot ticket, not only because Bob Crane had a hand in developing it, but also because it is just elegant in how it works. It's got buttons and knobs and all the things you want on a radio. It's got a remote control with 99 presets, and you know what? You're going to fill up all 99. You have no shortage of things that you will want to bookmark. It's got a timer, a clock, and it's my bedside clock, in fact. It comes with a built-in speaker, but there's also a jack for headphones. I use the pillow speaker, put it under my pillow so I can listen all night long, and no one's going to hear it but me. And, in fact, the pillow speaker from the Sea Crane Company is divine because it's really high quality, and you can lie right on it, and it's still comfortable. But CC Wi-Fi is only $99.95. You not only get all the streams through the Receiva platform. They're an aggregator that put all the streams on the radio. But if you like Live 365, it's there. If you're a subscriber to SiriusXM, it's there. If you're looking for podcasts, they're there and more. So check it out. You can go online to ccrane.com anytime. There's a link right on the homepage at raleigh.net. Or you can give them a call tomorrow. They'll be in whenever you get up. unlike most retailers online, they have real customer service. Operators are not standing by. You'll call tomorrow and talk to them in the office, and they'll actually answer right away. Yeah, none of this, your call is important to us, hold on for a week, real people helping you. Only $99.95, but if you mention the coupon code JAMES, yep, J-A-M-E-S, you get 5% off your whole order. You can do that online, too. Just put James in the coupon code, and they'll honor that. The Sea Crane catalog, you'll find something you just got to have. Maybe it will be a Wi-Fi radio. You tell them that Raleigh sent you.
If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. 8888-RALEIGH.
Yeah, it gives me an excuse to play Dr. Feelgood and the Interns, Atlanta's finest. All right, we're talking. It's a horrible subject, but it behooves you to know all you can about this. And don't you dare be rooting for it to fall apart in front of your eyes, because if it does, here, single payer, here we come, socialized medicine. Larry Lawrence R. Huntoon, MD, PhD, is our guest, an accomplished physician who takes time out to educate individuals, and I'm sure fellow medical professionals as well, in his many, many different facets with AAPS and more. So, of course, I'll have links to the Complete Lives system. It should shock the living daylights out of you. But, of course, if you are sick and or have medical problems, you know how bad it's going to get. So Larry, we'll kick it off with Charles in Tennessee. Hello, Charles.
Hello, how you doing? Dr. Huntoon, what do you think the prospects are going to be for, Raleigh knows my situation, I have something so rare, there's eight of us alive on the planet, and there's the only doctor I would trust is the doctor that diagnosed me, and it's just so bizarre about what little there is to do, the one medication that possibly, theoretically, can do something, is about $4,000 a dose. And if I were to do, and I won't even start it because of potential side effects and stuff like that, and I told him, I said, I don't want to be into the company for $1.5 million a year if I had to take it every day, and I might have to take it up to daily, and it would take a lot of my time. But what are people going to do that have something that really there is no groundwork on the treatment for it? They just have thrown things at me. Well, we can do a liver and a bone marrow transplant, or we can do this or this. And then they don't really have a prescribed treatment because they've not seen enough people with it. And I'm doing fairly well, although I had 6 months of hell. I've had vertigo and a continuous migraine, but because I was allergic to the one medicine I took, the thyroid, and I found finally just through trial and error I found it out. But he lets me do what I want to. I'm going in 2 weeks from now, and he'll just say, "What have you written down? What have you seen? What do you feel? What do you think? We'll try this or that."
All right, but
he does blood work.
What I think you're asking is, with the coming ACA, when you're dealing with things that aren't in the cookbook because they're relatively rare or unknown or individual, what's going to happen with treatment there?
Yes.
Okay, what do you think,
Lee? I think it's going to be very difficult to get treatment. And you have to realize that the government funds a lot of the research in this country. And of course, they don't. They devote the resources to the numbers. That is the the diseases that affect a lot of people. The other aspect you mentioned is the very high price of certain medications, and a lot of that has to do with the government FDA regulation.
Yes,
I think it's estimated that it might cost a company something like $800 million to bring a new medication to market. So they have to try and make that up over a number of years, and that creates the high price, I think, of a lot of the medications. And that's, a lot of that's due to the government regulation by the FDA that's imposed on the pharmaceutical company.
I agree with that. By the way, thanks, Charles. I appreciate the call, and good luck. Talk to you soon.
Yep.
Okay. You know, I'm glad you brought this up, because we think, the way we're told, that the FDA is here to protect us, but the reality is the FDA is not testing these drugs. They're relying on the tests from the pharmaceutical manufacturers. In some cases, depending on what the drug is, the manufacturers are granted immunity from any type of lawsuit for untoward effects. It seems to me, rather than have an FDA at all, just allow patients to sue anybody who harms them, if it can be proved that there was a real malfeasance and responsibility, that you don't have to spend 8 years getting something to market that, if it fails, well, that money's just down the drain, and most of what you test will fail, so only a fraction of it's going to make it. So how can it not be $1.5 million for somebody?
And understand that there's another harm that's done to patients by the FDA, that the delay in bringing some of these things to market, even the ones that are successful in coming to market, there's a delay of a number of years. Well, during those years, it might have helped save the lives of a number of people had it been on the market and available. So that's another way,
yes,
I think, that FDA does harm to patients in creating the delay in bringing some of these innovative medications to market.
Of course they do. And if you're, if you've got a fatal diagnosis, or even just a crippling, painfully diagnosis-type situation, I think it should be up to you whether you want to take the risk or the chance on something, not the FDA. But the underpinnings of socialism, whether you're looking at medicine or the economy or anything, is always, we know better than you how you should live your life.
Right. There are smarter people than us that are going to make that decision for us. But still, it ought to be an individual's assessment of the benefit-risk ratio.
Right, of course. And it also seems to me, in a free society, that if someone harms you and you have the right to remedy legally, that there's no company in the world that is going to release anything that they think is going to get them sued out of existence. That's enough of a deterrent right there.
I agree.
So we're, unfortunately, instead of being closer to that, we're further away. And, you know, we talk about it as communism or socialism, but it's also, considering the corporate involvement and the hand-in-hand with Big Pharma and companies like Monsanto and all that, there's a fascistic quality in this as well.
That's exactly right. That is, the government doesn't own these various means of production, but they certainly control it through regulations, and that's what fascism is about.
For patients who want to take control of their own lives as much as possible, many of them come across the startling idea that, you know, if I exercise more and I eat well and I get enough sleep, I'm probably going to feel better. Now we get to eating well, because we have states that are prohibiting manufacturers from labeling something as being not genetically modified.
Right. It's all getting a bit crazy, and they're also regulating big gulp sodas and the rest of it.
Right, exactly. And thank God that was struck down in New York, Bloomberg's dream of how many ounces a private restaurant could put in a glass. It's insanity, but it all goes back to, we know better than you. Sit down and shut up. And I don't think there's any single bigger encroachment into the liberty of Americans than Obamacare. I can't, even the LBJ nonsense of the Great Society doesn't hold a candle to what this one piece of legislation is going to do to our lives.
Yes, and that's exactly it. This impacts our lives in ways that nothing else has.
Yeah, and I'm tremendously concerned about this, concerned that, you know, as you mentioned, there are a number of doctors who will say things like, well, you know, it's better than nothing. We have to do something. And then I look at the figures and realize that I'm not 100% sure we're even going to be insuring more people in the long run. We have exchanges, if you will, and I'm sure you're very familiar with the navigators of these exchanges who it's identity theft in the making. They require no high school diploma. They require no fingerprinting, no background check. They will have access to your every private piece of information. And who's going to be verifying that they're not doing what they want with it?
Well, that's a very good question, particularly with what we've seen with the NSA recently and what's been going on there. And you cannot protect this information once it gets out into networked computers. I was in Washington, D.C., and was providing input at the time that they were passing the HIPAA regulations. Yeah. And there were experts there on encryption. And they said there was absolutely no way that the privacy of medical information could be kept private once it is in these networked computers that are outside the doctor's office.
Oh, of course it can't. And we were sold a bill of goods that this was going to keep us safer. It was hard to me to believe anyone bought that. You have one keystroke error and you don't even come up with the right information at a hospital. But apart from that, when you're looking at medical information, I think of things like psychiatry and for how long people would not get treatment in the quote-unquote dark ages because of the stigma. And we saw that as recently as a few decades ago when Thomas Eagleton was kicked out as the vice presidential nominee because he had received treatment for depression. Many people would never be willing to unburden their soul. We overcame that to a great degree. We removed the stigma. People went and received care. And now where we are is all of that is in electronic form. It's being shared with law enforcement to determine if you can own a gun. Who in their right mind would seek mental health treatment?
Well, that's a good question. And a lot of people misunderstand. They think the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, they thought that that protected their privacy. Oh. But it does. What it does is the opposite. It greatly expanded access to your private confidential medical information. As you mentioned, the authorities can get access to it fairly easy. Researchers can get access to it, and a whole host of people can get access to that information that most people have no idea. And here in New York State, where I am, they just passed the New York SAFE Act, which is a gun control act. And psychiatrists, if they inquire about the person having a gun, the patient having a gun, and they got some psychiatric condition, the psychiatrist is forced to report it to the authorities.
Right.
Well, how many people are you think are going to seek psychiatric care that own guns that are going to go there and be treated for their mild depression? They're not going to do it.
Of course not. And if the psychiatrist does not do this, he is in trouble criminally.
Right.
So
fines and punishments.
Right, right. So there's no avoiding it for the doctor. You know, if he says, I didn't ask her the question, and next it comes back that he was the guy's patient and the guy had a gun. I mean, we can see where this is going. The jails are going to be full. So it puts the doctor in an awful position. And yes, as more patients realize this, people who are deeply troubled are not going to seek treatment. Every time I've had to sign, the HIPAA form, and of course that's another thing. People believe that they're signing on some kind of permission. All they're signing, as you know, is they're signing to say they got a copy of some ridiculous
right.
privacy right. Well,
right.
I used to refuse to sign it, and that always put them in a tizzy. The whole nursing staff would say, but this is for your privacy. And I'd say, and you haven't read it.
Pharmacies, there are chain pharmacies that require that you sign that you've received the HIPAA acknowledgement.
Right.
And it was 4 or 5 years ago, we had a dog who was diabetic. And, of course, the syringes that are used, those are by prescription, ordered by the vet.
Right.
The insulin's available over the counter. But do you know that in order to get the syringes for the dog, mm-hmm. who, by the way, is not covered by HIPAA,
right.
who goes around naked and doesn't really care,
yeah.
I had to sign the HIPAA acknowledgement. I explained to the pharmacy people, but the HIPAA law doesn't apply to dogs, and it didn't matter because they said that their system would not go ahead and allow dispensing of whatever it was until it was signed. So I signed on the dotted line PAW.
Right. Well, exactly. Right, right. And anytime I've had to sign it in those circumstances, I also hope they're going to be audited by the government because I always write underneath it something like HIPAA invades privacy. It doesn't protect it. You know, my little statement there.
When you tell them that in a doctor's office or pharmacy, they just look at you like you're crazy, that you just don't understand that HIPAA is out to protect you.
Oh, yes, yes. I've had people pretty much look at me like I'd lost my ever-loving mind and I was some kook, and these were otherwise responsible medical professionals. And that's when I think, I don't want them diagnosing me. but, of course, who reads this stuff? You look at these bills, it's like Nancy Pelosi saying you'll know what's in Obamacare when you pass it. Most people are utterly clueless what might be in any of this.
Right. Unfortunately.
Yeah. So we get exactly what we deserve on this, but it's almost impossible for an individual to be vigilant to the point of being able to really affect any change in any of this. You have affected a change just from your writings and from speaking out and from deciding that you're opting out of the system and giving real care to people. And I thank you for doing that.
Well, I thank you for having me on the show tonight. I mean, it's been my pleasure.
Well, thank you. I hope we will do it again. Unfortunately, I'd love to say that I hope we do it under better circumstances, but I'm sure next time they'll be only more dire, but your time will be more needed.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to you soon, Larry.
Uh-huh.
So that's Lawrence R. Huntoon, MD, PhD. The Complete Live System, I'll have a link to that. And yes, be afraid, very afraid. We will continue to look at all facets of course, Obamacare. And anybody who is looking at it by the numbers, millions of workers will dump employer plans under Obamacare. That's a pretty big one, too, because the model was expecting that employers would continue to provide the policies. There's a lot of reasons why that won't be happening for a good percentage of it. Could be as much as a $132 billion a year hike in subsidies, for instance. Yeah, from people willing to go onto the exchanges and have a navigator who's got a vested interest in God knows what in terms of their own activism. Having control of every piece of data ever on you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that. One of my favorite topics that scares the living hell out of me is net neutrality, and I want to get back to that right after this on The Raleigh James Show.
It's The Raleigh James Show.